How can we improve intercultural relationships and communications in a business setting in a world that is more divided than ever? Today, I have Christa Uhlinger with me from Switzerland, who is a cross-cultural communication expert and a psychosynthesis specialist. Welcome to the show, Christa.
Hello, Mike. Nice to be here.
Christa, what is intercultural communications?
So intercultural communication is actually a field of study dealing with the question, how can people who are culturally different work together effectively and so on? So easy said, but it's a very complex topic.
So how can we be more culturally sensitive towards each other?
I think that's a very good question. And of course, we could discuss this probably for an hour. But becoming more intercultural sensitive means that you need to know about your culture, and your own culture is actually unconsciously somewhere. So you're not thinking about, okay, I meet Mike now, I need to behave like this because that's my culture. It's running like a program. So that's one part. The other part is we need to understand the other person and their culture. And in the field of intercultural communication, there are a lot of tools available to actually start to work with those differences and values, which show up then in the behavior, in the communication, in how people think and so on. And by becoming more aware of mine and the other person, we can become more culturally sensitive because we start to realize and understand why the other person ticks like she or he does.
What are some of the fundamental pillars of creating a better, more empathic understanding?
You need a certain foundational knowledge on intercultural communication. You need to develop certain skills, respect, attitudes also. Listening skills, to me, very important. Listen to people because you can also hear cultural differences. Observation skills, very important to see how does the other person behave and how can I tie it into their culture. Empathy, very important. Open-mindedness, because one is confronted with foreignness. If I interact with somebody who is different, you are faced with foreignness and challenged in your comfort zone, which is not always very easy. This is the foundation.
Thank you for sharing that. So what are some of the reasons why there are difficulties with intercultural communication?
I would say that people are not aware why the other person ticks like he or she does. And oftentimes they see this interaction as a problem. I have a lot of clients calling me and say, hey, Mrs. Uhlinger, I have a problem with, for instance, Americans or with Italians or whoever. And they forget, and I think that's normal, they forget that they are part of the interaction. And my favorite question then to ask is, yeah, I can understand. And I believe the other person has a problem with you too. And so they go, what? No, why? But then we are in discussion, say, hey, you are part of this interaction and you contribute to this interaction, your cultural identity. And I think that's one important point, that we tend to blame the other and forget to think about ourselves, that we're part of it and that we contribute to it.
So once we become more culturally aware and we start to understand the values of the other people, then we can have a more meaningful communication and we can arrive to common grounds. How do we maintain this dynamic in the communication?
That's a very good question, because it's, of course, even for me after all these years, and I'm in this field for 20 plus years, I also experience situations where I go, oh no, yeah, come on. So I think that's being human. And another aspect which I think it's very important is to accept and acknowledge I'm human. I react to something which is different. And then we need to learn to say, oh, wait a moment, here's my reaction. Let's stop and let's verify if this is true, what I just had as my first reaction. Or I sometimes ask myself, if I get angry, I'm just questioning myself, saying, okay, Krista, so which of your values are right now are challenged? So it's a continuous learning. And I think that's what's needed. This is all about people, and this is not the tick the box activity. If you really want to tap into the potential of culture and the innovation, which is there, it's a continuous learning. And one of my favorite professors once said, hey, I'm learning every day, and he's now in his 80s. And don't you think that you stop learning after a while? It's an ongoing, lifelong learning process.
Okay. So this intercultural communication is not only important in international trade, where businesses have foreign suppliers, or they might have to craft a marketing message for a different culture. But often today we have very diverse working environments as well. So diversity is very much present in the workplace, within the company as well.
Exactly.
How can companies facilitate a positive workplace atmosphere for diverse employees?
I think by acknowledging that and to see the power of diversity, I think there is a power in it. If you start to use it and you consciously work with differences and similarities, there always also are similarities. You start to consciously work with it. There is a power in it. You can also just be as most people, or you can take a decision, say, hey, there's something we can use. And I think it's getting more and more important in the world we live in. But that's a decision to take. And then you need to be a role model. Yes, role model what you mean, and show the empathy, and show that you acknowledge each and every person, no matter what, and so on and so forth.
So what would you advise to a manager in a company who see that some of their employees are overly sensitive or get triggered easily?
What I always do is I assess people where they are on their journey of developing intercultural sensitivity. So there are assessment tools available, because my experience is everybody is on a journey. So you cannot assume that everybody is on the same track, which needs the people, the manager, to support people where they are. And by using an assessment tool, for instance, that's very helpful, because you can see where they are and you can support them based on where they are.
That's great. That's really fantastic. So how can you assess people's competence in intercultural communications?
I use a tool, it's called Intercultural Development Inventory. It's a tool which is available for many years, and it's a developmental tool. So it's not like you measure people and then they are red and blue and whatever. It's a developmental process. And so this consists of 50 different questions, and you need to rate the statements on 1 to 10. And it's very interesting where those people stay on their journey of becoming more intercultural sensitive, depending on age, on their experiences, on how they grew up and things like that.
What are some of the competences that you measure on this scale?
On this scale, you measure the underlying relationship on how you deal with different culture. It's general average on how you deal with culture, no matter what culture. It shows you the general sensitivity. So it's not measuring the, okay, how does your empathy look like, or your listening skills, or things like that. There are other tools available for this too. The one I use is really, it's a general measurement of your intercultural sensitivity.
So you mentioned empathy, listening skills, and what was the last one?
Observation skills.
Observation skills. How can people improve empathy, listening skills, or observation?
It's interesting. A lot of people tell me they have a high empathy, or they're very respectful. And once I see them working, it looks a bit different. I think that's normal. I think you can train those skills. For example, observation skills, you start to observe your surroundings. I always play around in meetings. I observe people, how they behave in a certain situation, how they proceed and things like that. So it doesn't happen from one day to the other. It will take a while. And listening skill is just be present, listen, really listen.
So when we talk about the observation skills, what would be some of the traits that you'd be looking for when you're observing someone?
I would look for how does this person behave? Where are his or her eyes, for instance? Is there eye contact or is there no eye contact? Is somebody speaking much louder or not? Is somebody speaking up, hey, I have something to say, or saying nothing? Things like that. It's really interesting. If you're in a meeting, who is talking? For instance, a so-called pattern of silence. Does somebody wait until you finish talking, or does somebody so-called interrupt you? Or is there a silence in between? Things like that. And the more you observe and you sharpen your observation skill, especially in the intercultural setting, the more you become aware of, I call them cultural hints, which help you to understand why a person acts the way she or he does, given you have the foundational knowledge.
How can people be less judgmental towards other cultures?
That's the whole topic of having biases, stereotypes. So I think, first of all, to acknowledge again that you're a human being and that you're having images and ideas about the culture you don't know. But then it's the next step to realize, okay, that's my image, and ask yourself, is it really true? Does it fit? Because what we normally do, we have an image, we put it on everybody from of the same culture, like Swiss are slow. Okay, each and every Swiss is slow. That's the mechanism. But if we learn to see, okay, I'm a human being, I have these images because they help me, it's orientation, it gives me some safety, but then verify it, and then you will open up again. The danger lies in sticking everybody into the same box, like Swiss are slow, or each and every Swiss is slow, okay? But if you break it, then you're on the move again.
What would be the next step?
To break it?
After breaking this belief that every Swiss are slow, what would be the next step to build a better relationship with a Swiss business owner, maybe?
Because the trick there is, if you in your head you have this image of every Swiss is slow, okay, for instance, then you relate to this image and not to the person itself, because you might meet the person who is very fast, actually a Swiss, okay? And that's why you need to break this image and, okay, let me verify, is it really true that this person I relate right now is slow? And then, yes, you might find one who is slow and you might find who isn't. But then if you start to dance this dance again, open the box and dance it, then you relate to the real person and not to the image.
Okay. So let's say I encountered a person that validates my stereotype, my judgment, and I notice this person is slow, which might be incompatible with my values somehow. Yet here we are, and we need to do business together. Where do we take this?
Then it's okay, assuming this person is slow, it takes much longer until a task is done, for instance, or you are very efficient, so you might get a bit uncomfortable. But then it's important to see the gap. So that once you're aware of this gap, so here's a fast person, here's a slow person, then you can start to think about, okay, now what can we do? How to bridge these differences? So that's the next step.
Do you bring this into awareness in the dialogue?
Yeah. If you can do, it depends on the culture. Are you in the position of doing it? Are you dealing with somebody from a culture where it's okay to address it? Or do you need to be creative and find another way? And that's where the intercultural, I love it there, because it's really creative. You can get very creative. But you need to think a bit out of the box sometimes.
What are the advantages of having a diverse workforce in the workplace?
If you're capable of tapping into this creative potential. I think there is better communication, better teamwork, better solutions, more innovative solution, because people look from different angle on the same problem or challenge. I heard of examples where a company created, for instance, a new product, and they put a diverse team into place, and they used the best from all cultures, and they created an innovative new product, which then was very successful.
So let's say there is a startup, and they recognize the benefits of having a diverse team and getting the different type of perspectives, and maybe they want to market their products on different markets as well. So they need that input from the representatives of the different markets. How can they develop an intercultural communication training in the company to hire these diverse teams?
If you say yes to it, I would suggest you train those people, but not only one day or half a day or 1 hour. Doesn't help. It's because we humans, it's an internal change if you want to become interculturally effective, because you need to deal with something which you might not know. You need to learn how to deal with ambiguity and uncertainty of not knowing. So I would tell them, okay, train your people, but train them over time, like in a process-oriented way, and not just one training, say, of 6 hours doesn't really help. If you want to inform people, yes. But if you really want to work on their intercultural competencies or sensitivity, that's a process. When I work with people, I always work process-oriented, and that's really successful. And that's oftentimes, if I work with company, there is a gap because they would like to have immediate results. Okay, train my people, and tomorrow they're culturally sensitive. But we deal with people, and it takes time.
Can they actually create an internal training program and maybe some regular measurement technique?
Yeah, how I proceed is I start with their culture to make it aware, make the unconscious conscious so you can deal with it. As long as it's unconscious, it manages you. So it's an important part to think about my own culture or also the company culture and how this shows up in our interaction. Then we can think about the other culture, and there are many tools available helping us. You can also look them up. And so on, and then go from there and say, okay, if I want to work effectively in a multicultural team, then you need to set it up a bit different and give it more time at the beginning and things like that. So it depends on the needs, and then go from there. To me, there's no universal program.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really insightful. Now, when we go back to doing business with a foreign company, let's say I'm pitching a deal to a foreign business, is there more to it than just diplomacy?
Yeah, I think so. For instance, in my career, I was for quite a while working in Central Eastern Europe. And what we did there was we bought some companies, we set them up from the ground, things like that. I was the European head of corporate communication. So in this role, I supported it. And then I saw that when you enter a market, business people analyze everything, of course, from a business perspective. But what they oftentimes miss is the cultural perspective. And you can analyze the cultural perspective before you even enter a market. So that's very interesting to see. I had once a client and he said, I don't know, Krista, but we lost about 10 million Swiss francs in 1 year. And we don't understand why. We spent the whole day today analyzing it and we don't understand it because we analyze everything. We cannot see it. And then I was like, ever thought about cultural aspects? And he goes, what? No, really? No, and we didn't think about it. I said, okay, I actually had a drink with this guy. I said, okay, the next 3 glasses of whatever are on your invoice. And we had a look at it. And the whole project from a cultural point of view was set up wrongly. So they started in one country and then they were very successful. And then they said, okay, best practice, let's apply it. And it didn't work anymore. And after 1 year, they had to stop the project. They had a of about around 10 million.
Wow. Wow, that must have been horrible for the company. So this is an interesting example that you brought up, that if successful companies maybe want to set up a shared service center or let's say an outsourced team or just a branch in a different country, how can they ensure that branch is going to operate according to their expectations, and how can they integrate the company values in a different culture?
Yeah, I think, first of all, that you are aware that culture plays a role, that also the national culture where you're going to is important to be aware of, and then go from there and then again build up the company culture on the ground, but include also the national culture, because the one approach might not fully work in the new cultural environment. So you need to refine it a bit. And what I always found fascinating is actually this approach of best practice doesn't work across cultures. So my stare is take it as an idea, verify culturally if it really works.
That's very interesting what you say there. So do you think there is like a streamlined method that can work globally anywhere?
I don't think so. I think there might be some global aspects working. It's not like a recipe, here's the recipe and that's how you're going to do it. There might be some steps you can consider, but then you need to look at the local culture.
So how can international franchises and say companies like Apple that have branches in pretty much every developed country, how can they ensure that the quality and the standards are same across all countries, really?
That might be a complex question. I also think it really depends on the product. Is it a product? Is it a service? Service is different. I was in insurance, and that's very people-oriented too. If you have a product like an iPhone where everybody just loves it, I think that's a different story.
Okay, so that comes down to the branding, and because there is a demand, then it's easier to integrate processes and company values even in foreign markets. So let's take another example. Let's say the Big Four. You have Deloitte or Ernst & Young in pretty much every developed country as well. And that's a consulting service, right? So how can they ensure that their services are culturally aligned to the companies that follow the global processes?
It's also, again, a question of their offer, their services. Is it more global? I believe there are some global services, but sometimes it's just also important to take into account the local culture too. And I'm not always sure if this is really happening. Sometimes if I observe it, I doubt it. I can give you an example. When I was the head of corporate communication for Europe, and I was in charge of 15 different countries, and I always worked, cooperated with local, for instance, media people, media consultant, because media is so different from country to country. And so I wanted to assure, who am I to go in one of these countries and say, hey, I know the media, and hey, let's talk to the journalists. So you need to know the context you're in, and you need to know also stories or the history and so on, and understand this business. So I always worked, cooperated with local people.
It's really interesting you mentioned marketing. Now, I think these days a lot of people are using AI tools to localize their content for marketing. Do you think AI can bridge this cultural gap?
No. I tested AI, and so far I use several times ChatGPT, and I was asking about intercultural topics and things like that. Nope. Too complex, I realize. There are some nice aspects, but it's not fine-tuned.
So this is where the human sensitivity and nuances really
kicks in.
Is needed, yes.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm also teaching. I always tell my students, I tested it. Don't do it. It's not good in regard to intercultural communication.
Interesting. It's good advice. It's really good to know if you're dealing with another country, maybe don't rely 100% on AI to do the job for you and get it culturally sensitive and right.
So I think that's where the human part kicks in, yes.
Christa, who do you typically work with? What kind of companies?
I work with mid-sized company, but also with bigger companies. I primarily work with individuals, but this oftentimes leads me into companies. Right now, for instance, I'm coaching a senior of one of the big fours because he went to a different country. And then oftentimes it's, hey, I feel there's something not really working the way I would like to work, but I can't really say what it is. And this guy has a certain sensitivity saying, I think it's about the cultural aspects. I need some help here. And then I work very practice oriented. That means I give some input, I coach, and then go and work, come back with your question so that we really immediately apply it into day-to-day business. This works very well.
So what would be your message to those who realize they lack in cultural sensitivity, but they are too ashamed to reach out for help?
Send me a quiet message. No, I'm joking. I think that's a very good question, because I think don't be ashamed of asking for help. Working across culture is not something which you just can do, I don't know, brushing your teeth. Oftentimes people think, yeah, that's no problem. I oftentimes talk to HR managers and then oftentimes they say, yes, it's very interesting what you do, but actually we don't need it because we are an international company. And that's the biggest miss. Then I say, okay, may I offer you an assessment? And sometimes they say yes and sometimes they say no. But if they say yes, then it's the truth is there. Because that's the biggest miss, working internationally equal being intercultural competent, not at all.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies might not want to take the assessment, either just not to highlight the problem. They'd rather sweep it under the carpet, as they say.
Yes. I have two clients types. One are the very sensitive ones, or sensitive enough to realize, hey, if I use it, I can be more successful. So these are my favorite clients, but they're not a lot of them. And the other ones, they need to hit the wall first. So they need to have failed in a project or something to become aware of, hey, there might be a cultural aspect in this.
So how can a company create more awareness about cultural sensitivity issues?
By talking about it, by also training people or do workshops and talk about it openly or write articles in their publication online and things like that. Because I think it's a lot of raising awareness. It's a raising awareness about the differences, but also the commonalities. It's a raising the awareness. What's the consequence if we do not consider cultural differences? There's always a consequence, especially in business. There's financial losses, project fail. You might lose the relationship to a client and things like that. So that's another nice example I have. For instance, I was teaching in a masterclass and there was one guy and he was sitting there and he was getting paler and paler in his face. And I really started to worry, honestly. And I said, are you well? Do you need a glass of water? And then he said, no, I'm very well, but I just realized why we lost the client. The story was that they had an Indonesian provider. And so they went to visit him. They are Swiss. They went to visit him. And his boss, the CEO of this company, showed them the company, introduced them to the employees and so on, was walking them through the production floor. And the Swiss boss was getting very nervous because he said, what am I doing here? I'm here to negotiate. And so he started in front of all the employees. He started to tell the CEO, the local CEO, of what his ideas were and how the contract should look like and so on. The reaction was the CEO disappeared. They didn't see the CEO anymore. And the business relationship failed totally, because now the cultural explanation is that's one of my favorite gaps. That's the gap between task orientation and relationship orientation. So in certain culture, like in Indonesia, you build up relationship first. If I trust you, I'll do the business with you. So that was why they were showed around everywhere. Now, from a Swiss perspective, task-oriented, I'm here to negotiate, I want to reach the result, clash, And because he was addressing it openly on the production floor in front of all the employees, the CEO additionally also lost his face. And in certain culture, that's heavy. So then you lose oftentimes the relationship. So that's another example. If you know about it, you can act differently.
Wow, that's powerful. So what's the most memorable result that you have achieved with any of your clients?
I think one of my memorable results is I was coaching executive board member, and he was in the executive board of a Japanese company. And I remember well when he called me and he said, I don't know what they're doing, but I need to reach my goals. And then I said, yeah, probably they don't know what you do either. And so we started to work. And he turned into a bridge between the Japanese and the Swiss. He did very well. And he took my inputs and he applied it immediately. He came back with questions, which was really a flow. So I told him, why don't you buy a little notebook and write down what you observe? And this, so that's what he did. He bought a notebook and he just wrote down some keywords. And then he came back and he said, oh, the situation's like this. And that's not how we do things. I said, wait, who says that? Let's have a look. What's your approach here? What's the Japanese approach? And so I provided him a foundation of intercultural knowledge, but also sharpened his skills. And at the same time, he immediately applied it. And so it was like getting into a rhythm. And at the end, I was really happy. He was really a very good bridge person. And people started to ask him, so perfect.
Wow, that sounds amazing when you can overcome these biases and start understanding how to navigate intercultural communications.
And you could also tell he was like, at the beginning, sometimes he came back and he said, oh my God, that's not how we work. And I was like, okay, breathe. Let's have a look at it. Who says that we don't work like this? What's your approach? What's the other approach? Can you see? And he said, oh, yes. And over time, he came, okay, I know what you say. I shouldn't say that's how we work. But yeah, that's the next step, exactly. So yeah, he really learned to, and that's important. Pause, have a look at it, because in business, we analyze everything, but just not the intercultural part. So pause, look at it, analyze it, and then move on.
Now, Krista, I understand that you have a program for people who want to develop their cultural sensitivity. Can you tell us a little bit more about your program? How does it work?
Yes, I will start a new program in 2024, which is called the Linking People Circles. Because when I worked with people, then they always said, okay, now what? Because the bigger challenge than knowing about it is actually applying it. And so I created a new program. It's a peer group program where it's really about deepening certain cultural aspects and then also bring your questions, get your answers, so really work on actual situations.
Thank you for sharing that. And if people would like to join your program, where can they reach you?
Best send me an email on krista.uehlinger@linkingpeople.ch. Or DM me via LinkedIn. Easy.
We'll put those links in the descriptions below so that people can reach out if they're interested. Yeah. Now, if somebody wants to increase their cultural sensitivity, what are the top three tips you can give them that they can start with today?
The top three tips? I would say if you don't have it, get a certain foundation in intercultural communication. Start to become more and more aware when you are in such a situation, because sometimes people don't realize the cultural aspects play a role. In the evening, instead of watching TV, go through your day and think about where was I in an intercultural situation and how did it look like. That also sharpens your observation skills. And yeah, and I would also next, I would say pause now and analyze the intercultural situation or get help for it, because otherwise it just might hit the wall.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing your tips and your deep insights. I think it's been hugely valuable. It's clear to see that people who want to do trade internationally really need this service? And if you build in a diverse team as well, you want to avoid conflicts in the team, you want to increase productivity and just generally have a positive atmosphere at work, this can be hugely beneficial for them.
And I also think most people look at it as a problem. That would be the fourth advice. Start to look at it as an opportunity. It's an opportunity. Because if it's a problem, it's much heavier. And I think that intercultural work can be fun and can be liked and is an opportunity. You can be creative and so on. It needs a bit of a change in the mindset.
Absolutely. We're living in the 21st century. Anybody can just get on a plane, fly. You can go all over the world. The internet has broken down all the barriers between us. And really, we share this planet together. So it's so fundamental and it's so essential that we better understand each other and we're respectful towards each other's cultures.
Absolutely.
I really love what you do, and I think it's very helpful for the companies as well who want to improve on these skills, because like you say, it's not always natural, especially if you grow up or you build a business in a very homogeneous environment and you want to grow that somehow, maybe abroad, you have foreign suppliers even, you just need to learn how to deal with them.
Yeah. By the way, I gave a TED talk this year at the beginning of the year on the gift of foreignness, where I talk about on how to tap into this potential or what happens if you don't.
Oh, fantastic. Well, please share the link with us as well, and we'll put that below also. So can you tell us a little bit about your TED talk?
Yes. So the TED talk, I was actually invited to give the talk. And I called it, the title is The Gift of Foreignness. And then I'll go through a situation I experienced myself when I was the head of corporate communication. And that was the situation I was collaborating with Italy. And so I flew in the morning to Milano and I went to the office and I was like, okay, in the taxi, I have to do this and this and call and blah, blah, blah. And then I arrived at the office and there was this guy. I call him Giorgio in my TED talk. I actually brought him on stage. And Giorgio was just leisurely looking at me and saying, hi, ciao, Krista, let's have a coffee. And then off he goes with me into one of the coffee bars. And we had only 1 hour, I think, or two, I can't remember. We were in the coffee bar. He was talking about his family and tra-la. And I was getting very uncomfortable because in my mind I go, okay, I need to achieve this. And after about half an hour, then he said, okay, let's go back to the office. And I'm like, thanks God. But then I had much less time available. So I'll give this story and then I analyze it in the TED talk. And then I say, okay, at that moment, I didn't really actively think about culture, but what would be if and things like that. Yeah.
So what would be an appropriate solution in this scenario? If you had to redo that meeting again, what would you do different?
I think I wouldn't be stressed as I was there. I would look at the Italian values beforehand. So that would give me an idea of, okay, this person might act in this and that way. So I could see that espresso is part of the business culture and talking about family and so on. Yeah, that's also part of it. And so if I know, I can go there differently and say, okay, or I might say, okay, let's have a meeting of 90 minutes instead of 1 hour. When you know, you can come up with a solution, different approaches. But I would be very relaxed because I realized we anyway achieved it just in a different way.
Would you leave more time for the meeting?
Maybe. Yeah, that could be a strategy, but might be that you then sit longer in your espresso bar. You never know. But yeah, it's always trying different options out too. That's part of it, dancing the dance of intercultural too.
I'm actually very surprised about this example, to be honest with you, because I know part of Switzerland is obviously Italian as well. So yeah. I thought that you were culturally closer maybe and you wouldn't experience these differences.
I have a lot of cultural misunderstanding within Switzerland.
Just because you share French, Italian and yeah. German, right?
Yes, and German. And then also the German part and the French part. We talk about the Rösti dish. So Rösti is it's a Swiss national dish. It's great potatoes. And so we jokingly talk about the border between the German-speaking and the French-speaking part. It's called the Rösti dish. And so this always shows the cultural differences too. It's really interesting. So we are like, okay, Rösti dish.
That sounds like you're very well positioned on this diverse market.
Yes.
All right, yeah. Krista, thank you very much for joining us for the podcast. And for our listeners, if you enjoyed my conversation with Krista about cross-cultural or intercultural communication and how to improve cultural sensitivity, how to cultivate diversity and sensitivity towards diversity at the workplace, please subscribe to our channel and listen out for our upcoming podcast as well. And if you would like some training about this, please reach out to Krista. As you can hear, she's a very experienced expert in the subject, and I'm sure she can help you.
I'm sure I can. And it's my passion.
Love it. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.